And reading through his word, if you're following along in that devotional study, we've been reading through Matthew 21 through 25. And I think, well, what's a lesson from these chapters that I may present? And I thought, well, I want to focus on something that'll challenge us. So then, if you have a mind too, you can relax your mind when you go watch a ball game after services tonight. So Matthew 24 is a text that I selected for this evening. And I've been challenged. In fact, I should have known better than to choose this chapter to try to cover in one lesson. But I want to begin a study of Matthew 24 this evening, beginning with this question. Do the signs indicate that the end of the world is near? Do the signs indicate that the end of the world is near? And most everyone in the religious world would say yes. Yes, they do. And many would suggest that Matthew 24 provides signs by which we can predict when Jesus will come again. And so I want us to study Matthew 24 to see if there are indeed signs that point to the time when Christ will come. Here is one text from Matthew 24. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. And that's one of those texts that many will take and say, well, see, that's pointing to some signs that by which we can see that will indicate that the Lord is returning very, very soon. And some through the years have taken these to be such signs. In 1920, Judge Rutherford wrote of this passage saying, nations shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, was fulfilled in 1914 with the beginning of World War I. He further stated that the predicted pestilence was the great wave of influenza which swept over the world in those days. The earthquakes of which Jesus spoke, he suggested, were the revolutions which took place about this same time in Russia, Germany, Austria, and Hungary. So that's back in 1920 when one man taking Jesus' statement here and trying to apply them to end-time events came up with those suggestions. Billy Graham, in a preface to John Wesley White's World War III book, also considers Matthew 24 to list, quote, signs that Jesus said would provide the world scenario signifying his impending return. By the way, John Wesley White's book has a chapter on each of the various terms in Matthew 24, such as earthquakes and pestilences and famine and wickedness and so forth. Hal Lindsey joins this group of those who believe Matthew 24 provides the basis for predicting that the end of the world will come soon. He wrote several books, one of which is the 1980s Countdown to Armageddon. And here's a quote from that book. We are the generation which will see the end of the present world and the return of Jesus Christ. That was 1980, 37 years ago. LaHaye and Jenkins are two authors. One book they've written is Are We Living in the End Times? By the way, it's their work that's behind the Left Behind movies. Many of you may have seen those. They say this, we believe that some of these signs of Matthew 24 already have been fulfilled and that the time of the end could well be soon, even within our generation. So again, these are a sampling of some writers that have taken Jesus' statements here and said, yes, the signs are here, and the signs are pointing to the end of the world. Is that what Jesus is saying? Is that what he's predicting? Let's go into the text and see what we can learn. First of all, we need to understand the occasion. By the way, Stafford North, a brother in Christ, a teacher, retired Bible professor from Oklahoma Christian University, has written a book, Like a Thief in the Night, that was one of my primary sources, and I commend that work to you. But the occasion, what was the occasion? Well, let's begin in Matthew chapter 23. In Matthew 23, there's a series of woes that Jesus pronounces upon the religious leaders of that day, the Jewish leaders, the scribes and the Pharisees. And those woes, those series of condemnations, are climaxed by the accusation that they will follow in the footsteps of their fathers who had rejected the prophets through the years. Notice with me Matthew 23, verses 34 through 36. Jesus says to them, "Therefore indeed I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar." Now notice verse 36. "Assuredly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation." This generation. God was going to judge these people. And he says, all these things will come upon this generation. Question, to whom does this generation refer? And the answer would be the ones to whom Jesus was speaking. The generation of that was living at that day and time when Jesus was speaking. Those then alive, he declared, "Upon you, upon this generation, will fall the climax of judgment due to the people of Israel who have rejected the words of prophet after prophet." And I want to underscore that statement. Upon this generation. Jesus was predicting that some great calamity would fall on those Jews to whom he spoke and whom he called this generation. Then comes in Matthew 23 that touching moment when Jesus seems to look out over the city and he says these words, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" When Jesus is pronouncing these condemnations, these woes upon the religious leaders of his day, he's in the temple courts, and he's about to leave the temple courts. And this is a depiction of Herod's temple, that in which Jesus would have been pronouncing and speaking to those people. And his disciples draw attention to these fabulous buildings, this beautiful temple. That takes us into Matthew 24. Notice the first two verses. "Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, 'Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down.'" What's he saying? This temple, this beautiful temple, the center of Jewish worship, the very structures that signified the chosen people of God in that day, those buildings would be torn down and not one stone shall be left upon another. In other words, it would be totally demolished. And imagine being one of Jesus' disciples and you're showing him these magnificent buildings, and Jesus said, "All of this is going to be reduced to rubble." And in my mind, and I'm sure in yours, you'd be wondering, how is that going to happen? What kind of cataclysmic event would that require for this magnificent temple to be reduced to rubble? Did this actually occur? Actually, it did. About 40 years later, in AD 70, the Roman general Titus and his Roman army fulfilled these words. He totally destroyed Jerusalem, including the temple, even throwing the stones of the temple down into the valleys on either side of the Temple Mount. This would be fulfilled just 40 years later. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. The disciples have some questions. Look at verse 3 with me. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, you see they've crossed over the Kidron Valley, walked up the Mount of Olives where they can probably see the city of Jerusalem from that perspective. And so they have some questions. They sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? After all, they've been told the temple is going to be destroyed. It's going to be reduced to rubble. And so naturally, they want to know, when is this going to happen? And how are we going to know when it's about to happen? What are the signs of your coming and the end of the age? Let me read to you Mark's account and Luke's account, and then we'll put it all together. Mark's account, Jesus says, "Tell us," or the disciples ask, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign when all these things will be fulfilled?" Luke's account, they ask him, saying, "Teacher, but when will these things be, and what sign will there be when these things are about to take place?" Putting it all together, I think there's essentially two questions that the disciples are asking. When would these things come about? These things has reference to when the temple would be destroyed, reduced to rubble. When is that going to happen? Question number two, what signs would tell them when that event was about to happen? If you were one of Jesus' disciples in that day, wouldn't you want to have a little advanced warning about when this was going to take place? This cataclysmic event when the temple would be cast down, these huge stones, and they would be as rubble. When is it going to happen? What signs are there that will tell us that the event is about to happen? In Matthew's account, we see these references, the sign of your coming and the end of the age. And there's some debate about to what these phrases refer. And it seems to me, combining Matthew, Mark, and Luke's account, that the end of the age here is not a reference to the end of time when Jesus returns and judges the world and heaven and hell are a sign. That's the end of the age. But the end of the age of which they are asking about, well, think about the temple. It would be the end of the Jewish age. It would be the end when this temple is just completely destroyed. In 70 AD, the Jewish age came to a complete and final end. Never again could the law of Moses be kept as delivered in the Old Testament. Tribal lines were gone forever. The Levitical sacrifices would no longer be possible because the temple is no more. So they're referring that to the end of this age, of God's dealing with the Jews as his special people. So when will this destruction take place? How will we know when it is about to take place? I want to jump ahead for a moment to a very critical boundary line in Matthew 24. And it's verse 34. And you'll find a familiar phrase. "Assuredly I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place." So I'm going to ask again, this generation, what does he mean by that? This generation. And the answer comes back again in the lives of the people that Jesus is speaking to. In that contemporary generation of Jesus. In the lifetimes of those to whom he is speaking. During the span of this generation, he says, all the things that he describes prior to verse 34 will be done. Thus, all the events described in verses 4 through 33 will happen during the lifetime of the people of the generation alive in Jesus' day. That is key to understanding what Jesus is teaching here. If you go back, if you remember, Matthew 23, Jesus says, all these things will come upon this generation. He's speaking to the religious leaders. He's saying, during your lifetime, this judgment is going to come. And I believe in Matthew 24, he's talking about that same judgment upon the Jews for their rejection of the prophets and the ultimate prophet in Jesus himself. This generation, those alive while he is speaking. And if you run a reference of Jesus' use of this generation, It's used seven other times in the book of Matthew, and the context makes it certain that Jesus was speaking of those whom he was then addressing. It's the use, the common usage that Jesus is using. You see, some seek to make it be a reference to the whole Jewish race. Others have argued that the word here means the final generation. That is, once the signs have begun, all these happenings would transpire in one generation. But the fall of the temple would be before one generation had passed. This generation of which he's speaking was the generation of people, the disciples, to whom Jesus was then speaking. So mark this down. All the events described before verse 34 would happen in that generation. In that generation. Events following that verse could, and as we shall see, do happen later. Now, does that fit what happened in AD 70? Certainly. The destruction of which Jesus spoke about prior to verse 34 took place in AD 70, a time when many of that generation who heard him speak those words were still alive. I think it's important to understand that context before you get into these so-called signs. But let's get into the signs, the misleading and preliminary signs, we can call them, beginning with verse 4. You remember, the disciples have asked, when will this temple be destroyed? And by what signs could they know that the destruction was coming? Verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. He gives them a warning first. He's answering their questions, but he's saying, watch out, beware, take heed that no one deceives you. You see, Jesus feared that as the disciples thought about his prediction, they might be vulnerable to every unusual thing that might occur, and they'd be wondering, is this it? Is this the time? Is this when the temple is going to be destroyed? And so when they hear about a war or a rumor of a war or there is an earthquake, then they would say, well, is this the time? Is this how God is going to do it? But he warns them, don't be deceived. Look with me at verse 4 now. Jesus answered and said, take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Now again, everything behind verse 34 has to do with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. He's saying you're going to hear about wars and rumors of wars, but don't be troubled. The end, and that is the end of that age, the Jewish age, when the temple would be destroyed, is not yet. Don't be thinking that these wars are necessarily tied directly to the end of which I am speaking. And it's not the end of the world that Jesus is referring to here, but the end of Jerusalem and the temple. His statement is not that when they hear of wars and false Christs, they should think that the end is immediate. Rather, he says, when you hear of these, do not be misled into thinking that the end is necessarily soon to come. I think the disciples are on pins and needles. What Jesus has told them, this magnificent structure is going to be destroyed. And they want to know when, and how can we know when it's about to happen. And so they're already antsy and anxious to know, well, what are the signs? How will we know when this is about to happen? Basically, Jesus is saying, it won't be when you hear about wars or rumors of wars or false Christs that come on the scene. Don't be deceived by that. Then Christ lists more possible misleading events in verses 7 and 8. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. He's saying beware that when you hear of an earthquake or a war or a famine, that you don't assume too much. These things will be happening and will be preliminary to the destruction of Jerusalem. But these events are not signals by which you can tell when this destruction is coming. By the way, I challenge any of us to do a search through history and find a 40-year period where there wasn't a war or a rumor of a war or a natural calamity such as an earthquake. He's saying, don't be deceived when you hear of these things and automatically think the end is here. He continues to give other events. Let me read with you Matthew 24, beginning with verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, because lawlessness will abound. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. All these things were going to happen in that generation. Did they? Yes. The church was persecuted. We can read in the book of Acts when it began. The gospel was preached in the whole world. Paul would say, Colossians 1, he was encouraging those Christians to remain faithful. And he says, don't move away from the hope of the gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which Paul became a minister. And he said that about AD 62. So the gospel was preached throughout the world. All these things happen. He said, but those are preliminary. And they're not even really signs, true signs, that the end is approaching. So let's put it all together now. He's speaking of the end or the destruction which will befall the beautiful temple and the city of Jerusalem. The disciples are anxious to know, when is this going to happen? What signs would there be to indicate to them that it was about to happen? And he in effect says, don't be misled by false teachers or wars or earthquakes or famines or even by persecution. All these things will take place along with the spread of the gospel into all nations. But these are not signs by which you can identify the exact time of fulfillment. Remember, the subject here is not the end of the world, but the fall of Jerusalem. And Jesus gives these lists not to give signs by which the disciples can predict when Jerusalem will fall, but to caution them not to take such events as signs by which they can predict when that destruction will be. Having said all that, the original question to us was this: do the signs point to the end of the world? If you're talking about the signs in Matthew 24, no, they don't. They were never pointing to the end of the world. They were pointing to the end of the age, the end of the Jewish age, when Jerusalem and the temple would be destroyed. And that was very significant because it meant God's chosen people were no longer the Jews. Now God's chosen people are going to be those who surrender to the greatest prophet, the Messiah, Jesus, the Son of God. That's God's chosen people. By the way, Jesus does give a sign to them. The real sign. But you're going to have to stay tuned for that one. But I hope that we see that when these verses are taken out of context, as they have been and continue to be by so many, they'll look at world wars, they'll look at skirmishes, they'll look at earthquakes, these calamities all over the world, and say, see, the signs are pointing to the end. I think Jesus in this context is saying, these things are going to happen, But don't automatically associate these things with the end of the Jewish age. It would be an abuse then to take these same things and make them apply to the end of the world when Jesus returns. Is the end coming? Absolutely. And we'll talk more about a sign, if you will, that of Jesus coming, Lord willing, next week. But I'll end it by saying this. He is coming again. And the truth is, we don't know when. And so we must live in a continual state of readiness. I believe that's the message of the latter part of Matthew 24, on into chapter 25, where Jesus gives these parables, where we see that he's talking about the judgment and when Jesus returns, and about how we need to be ready when that day comes. Are you ready? The way that we prepare ourselves is by surrendering our lives to Jesus Christ, who died for us. And it may be that there's one or more that is ready to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ tonight, to prepare yourself so that great day that's coming won't be a sad day, but it'll be a day that's welcomed, because that means Jesus has come to take us home. Or it may be that there are those that desire the prayers of the church tonight. If that be the case, please come right now as we stand and sing.